Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule. And I always say there's no set schedule. So when, like now, I've gone 2 weeks or 3 weeks without putting out a podcast, nobody can complain. And of course, there have been no shows for a while, mainly because I've been writing my own novel. I'm taking part in the National Novel Writing Month Challenge, which is all on the internet. Just go to National Novel, just Google it, National Novel Writing Month. And the idea is that you write 50,000 words, which is around about, what, 150, 200 page novel in 30 days. And I've got 3 days to go now, and I'm at 45,000 words. So I'm on course, I think, in the next 2 days of finishing my first ever first draft of a complete novel. I've tried lots of times, but this is the first time I've ever going to get to the end of a full novel of my own, which I'm very excited about. It's been quite an experience, quite a journey. If I read back through the book now, I'd probably give it only around about 1.5 or 2 stars, and that's looking like on the good side of things, maybe the ideas. But maybe in the new year, I'll have a lot of time to edit it, so I will be putting it out maybe online and or somewhere, publishing it for free somehow, because I'm not certainly not doing it for the money. And maybe, actually, when I've completely finished it and I've released it on the world, maybe I'll even do a review of it for the show. Although, reviewing your own book on your own... it's one of those internet is going to implode kind of moments, I think. Anyway, so first of all, before I get to the book review, a bit of feedback. There's some really good recommendations coming in. Dan Simmons' name has been mentioned a few times in the sort of kind of, hey, no, Luke, really, there is some really good cyberpunk out there. That kind of vibe coming off of Dan Simmons' books. Then again, people said that about both Snow Crash and Neuromancer. No, when I read Snow Crash and gave it a bad review, they said, no, read Neuromancer. And then I read Neuromancer and told a friend that I'd read it and didn't enjoy. He said, oh no, but if you want good cyberpunk, check out Snow Crash. And I'm like, oh, I can't win here. But I have read good cyberpunk. Another book that was mentioned, which is a good one, cyberpunk-ish, was Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan. But I've read that before, and I do consider it some kind of cyberpunk-themed book, if you would put it that way, and I did enjoy that one. So it's not that I'm down on cyberpunk altogether, just on the books that I've read recently. But keep sending in your suggestions by email or add them to the sfbrp.com wiki. A note about Neuromancer. Daryl sent me a really good email and an audio clip, which I want to play in a second, and he said, I wholeheartedly agree with your impressions of Neuromancer as overrated. I actually read it first as an audiobook. As you mentioned, the text is choppy and overdramatic. The narrator of the audiobook made it worse by reading everything in a really punchy style, like every phrase was describing the coolest thing in the world. It was awful. Bad enough that I thought you might enjoy a sample, about 60 seconds. Finding out who the audiobook narrator was at the very end of the book clinched my opinion. I've pasted the narrator's credit at the end of the sample. See if it's a surprise for you, as it was for me. And to be honest, it was a surprise. So to share this with all of my listeners, I think I'll open up iTunes and play it in now. Just listen to this. It's about a minute. It says here a minute and 22 seconds. And just listen to it. And then when the name of the... Try and think, who do you think this voice is? Who do you think is reading this? And when the name of the narrator is revealed at the end, I think you'll really enjoy it. Anyway, here we go.
Hideo straightened, slipping the cutters into his work pants. He held a section of the arrow in either hand. Malcolm had his eyes closed, his hand clasped tight around his bicep. "I will bandage it," Hideo said. Case managed to fall before Riviera could level the Fletcher for a clear shot. The darts whined past his neck like supersonic gnats. He rolled, seeing Hideo pivot through yet another step of his dance. The razored point of the arrow reversed in his hand, shaft flat along palm and rigid fingers. He flicked it underhand, wrist blurring, into the back of Riviera's hand. The Fletcher struck the tiles a meter away. Riviera screamed, but not in pain. It was a shriek of rage, so pure, so refined, that it lacked all humanity. Twin tight beams of light, ruby-red needles, stabbed from the region of Riviera's sternum. The ninja grunted, reeled back, hands to his eyes, then found his balance. "Peter," Three Jane said. "Peter, what have you done?" "He's blinded your clone boy," Molly said flatly.
This has been a Time Warner Audiobooks production of Neuromancer. written by William Gibson and read by the author.
And read by the author. I pissed myself laughing the first time I heard that.
3J, what have you done? What have you done?
Yeah, anyway, so that's that pretty much wraps up all of the comments that I needed to say about Neuromancer, and thanks a lot for Daryl to sending that clip in. Anyway, some bits about Dave the Triffids. Might as well get out some more feedback here. Quite a few people, I think 4 or 5 people, emailed me or sent me messages saying, do not, whatever you do, do not read Night of the Triffids. It's a review that, again, just reading from Daryl's email here, because I've got it open. He says that you may want to consider either warning listeners away from Night of the Triffids, a spin-off written by Simon Clark, or add it to your list of book reviews that you'll hate. If you like Day, you'll hate Night. It's got none of the crisp writing, dialogue is painful, the plot entirely illogical, and is full of pointless dead-end scenes that go nowhere. It really is excruciatingly bad. I have no idea how Clark got away with defiling the universe that Wyndham created. Well, authors defiling the universe that others have created, maybe a theme of today's book review that I'm going to do. Also, another email I just got today, actually, just as I was thinking about doing this podcast today, someone called Tamir, he sent this link in, because I was talking about I want a new film version of the book. It was announced yesterday, November 27th, on the BBC News website. Triffids are coming back to television in a 2-part BBC feature-length production. I'll put a link to that, if you care about it, on the wiki page of the Triffids episode to say that it's coming up. Anyway, so let's now get on to today's review after the feedback there. Getting on to Paul of June. It's written in 2008, or published in 2008, and written by Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson. I've reviewed Dune, the full book, the original book, gave it 4 stars. I think it was a high 4-star book as well. And it's a classic. It's a classic for a reason. If you want to listen, if you want to know about the Dune world and what makes the Dune so big and why it is, the top-selling science fiction book in the history of the world, go and listen to that. Episode 10 or 11, I can't remember which one it is. So go and listen to that and get a feel for Dune and read the Dune book, and it's really, really good. That's what I really want you to do. If you get only one thing from this podcast today, is that you really should read Dune to find out what all the fuss about. It's really, really good. The thing is, there's no spoilers in that review. There's no spoilers in this review either. I normally do non-spoilers. So even if you listen to my book, listen to my book reviews, you can always get a lot out of the books as well. So now let's come to the other non-canon kind of Dune books, which I might as well call them that. I reviewed Hunters of Dune, episode 9 or 10, I should really have looked this up, and I gave it 0.5 stars out of 5. It's the single lowest score of any book that I've read so far, or one of the lowest score. I don't think I've given less than 0.5 stars yet. And I explained in depth what I didn't like about that book, so if you want a complete my complete view on all of the non-canon Dune books written by Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson, go and listen to that, because that really explains the whole setup of that thing. What I'm going to do in this review is something a little bit differently. I'm just going to go through 4 things that I didn't like about this book, and the 4 reasons why I stopped reading at about page 180 or 170, 180 time. I did say that I was going to take every book on its own merits, because people were complaining about the snow crash. It's like, oh, but you know, Neil Stephenson's other books are really good. But it's like, okay, no, I don't do that. I review a book on the merits of the book I'm reading itself. And so, of course, if it's a good book, I'll give it a good score. And if it's a bad book, I'll give it a bad score. So I thought I'd tackle this one in isolation from the other books that these authors have written. I'll give them another chance, a fresh start, you know, after Hunters of Dune was so bad. This could be really, really good. So I'd give it a go. So let's just get straight into it. The 4 reasons. Reason the first is the story, where the story is set. It's set about a year after the end of the original Dune book, and it takes the place in the time up to the start of Dune Messiah, which is the second Dune book written by Frank Herbert, not Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson. And it means it suffers for 2 of the things that, you know, I really don't like about continuations of existing storylines, which is what I call sequel fatigue and prequel fatigue. Sequel fatigue is pretty much like you're reading it and you're thinking, wait a second, there's no reason that the author's gone on with this book. They just, you know, the publisher or the fans have just asked for more material. Probably the publishers, because they want to make money off the back of the old book. So if a book is meant to be a standalone book, Great. But if it's not a standalone book, there has to be a reason that you're writing it. And the reason has to be story. It has to be a message. It has to be something. And it has to be as good or as relevant or as interesting as the first book that you wanted. The thing is, so many books, you know, you get sequel fatigue when you think, wait a second, I'm getting sick of this character. They're just doing the same kind of thing over and over, or the ideas are getting more stupid, and obviously the authors run out of ideas. Prequel fatigue is a concept that I think was distilled in my mind when I was reading the Machine War books by Brian and Kevin, you know, the prequels to Dune. You feel it in other situations as well, but it's sort of like you know a story and you know what the characters are like in this story, but then there's another story set before that, and you know where the book is headed, and you know the events that must happen before that other book, and you know who's going to survive until they get there, and it's just like you're reading it and you're just killing time. It doesn't always happen. Not every prequel is like this, but a lot of prequels give me prequel fatigue. A popular example would be the Star Wars trilogy. Great, and then you get the Star Wars prequel trilogy, and by the end of episode 3, I was just sitting there going, wait a second, Anakin needs to turn into Darth Vader, they need to do that, and I was just watching this thing just happen, and I didn't care about anything. I knew what was going to happen as well, so it wasn't like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen at the end here. It's just like I was watching dumb characters hitting each other with lightsabers, and just didn't care about either. So here we have Paul of Dune. It's set in between two existing stories. And we know that, of course, it's a Dune book, so anything with Dune on the cover will make money. So the publishers know it, and, you know, the authors know it, and so does everyone else at this point. They have to know it. So they've got nothing to actually add to the Dune world, the universe of Jewel. And sort of even in the third of the way through the book, I was reading it thinking, there's no plot here. Nothing's happening. You know, a third of the way through the book, and it's just like, Paul did this, Princess Irulan did this, Gurney Halleck did this. And so massive sequel fatigue there. It's just because I was just going on with these characters and just thinking, I don't care about them anymore. And prequel fatigue to the max. Okay, the predicted jihad that raged across the universe that was at the end of, it was mentioned at the end of Paul. Paul knows it's going to happen and he's powerless to stop it. He's not powerless. He needs to let it happen because the alternatives are a lot worse. Okay, so there's something bad going to happen. It was left out of the original sequence of Dune books. Dune ended before this jihad happens. Dune Messiah picked up after it happened, because Frank Herbert really wasn't interested in that, because it's not that interesting. Because the next most important thing that happens in Paul's life is the things that happen in Dune Messiah. Quite interesting things, personal things, political things, you know, things that I don't want to mention here because it would spoil that Dune Messiah book. So, of course, the stuff that happens in this book, I know, is going to be resolved by the end of the book. And I know that Paul isn't going to die. And I know that Shani, his wife, isn't going to die. And I know that his sister's not going to die. And his other wife isn't going to die. And all these characters, I know that they're safe. I know that nothing is going to happen to them which is going to affect their lives. So everything that's going to happen in this book is going to be so unimportant that Paul won't remember it and won't mention it by the time we pick up his story again in Dune Messiah. So there's new enemies that are introduced, and for some reason, like, I'm meant to find them really interesting, but I can't find them interesting because I know that Paul will defeat them really easily by the end of the book. In Dune Messiah, when you're reading it, you don't know what's going to happen afterwards, and you think, is Paul going to survive until the end of this? And you never know in the other books, because some people turn bad, some people turn good. When you get to the end of the canon, like the Frank Herbert Dune books, the main characters are being played by the Bene Gesserit faction, you know. You're not even following the bloodline of Paul anymore. So it's a really weird thing going on here. But here I know that everyone is going to make it through okay, and I know that Paul is going to defeat the enemies and they're going to have zero impact on his life. There's no tension. Nothing bad can happen to the protagonist, and the antagonist will fail. We know in advance. And it's not like James Bond where, you know, it's interesting people that you're following and people you actually like. Here it's just like, oh, just get on with it. Anyway, an example. Oh yeah, I wrote a note down here in my notes here. An example. The book also follows not just this time in between Dune and Dune Messiah. It also goes back before Dune and talks about the young Paul and the events that are set before the original Dune book. And also it sort of mentioned that Princess Irulan didn't mention this in her original story of Paul, which I think we're meant to think that the original Dune book is based on, because it didn't matter to Paul and he never mentioned it to Princess Irulan, and that's why she didn't write it about it in the book. And yet if it's so uninteresting that Princess Irulan didn't write it, or Paul didn't say it impacted his life in any way, it means that it wasn't important. Why are we reading about this kind of thing if the people in the book thought it wasn't important enough to tell other people? Why do we have to sit here and read all the way through this? And you see, of course, it gets to the point where I didn't. Finally, there is this new antagonist. Like I said, there's new antagonists are set up. And to show how evil they are, they can't kill any main character. They can't have a big impact on the characters in the novel. So instead of just introducing a new antagonist, they also have to induce other main characters and then kill off those other main characters who we're meant to care about. But of course we don't care about them, but we have to care about them in a way to show how bad the new antagonists are to kill these people who we're meant to care about. It's a bit tricky, but it's just pointless. Paul's father, Leto, gets married to someone else. We never heard about this other person that he gets married to in the original Dune books. It's like, wait a second, isn't Paul's mother, Jessica, like the love of his life? He doesn't see anyone else. He actually says to her, I think in the original Dune book, I'm not going to marry you. I'm going to keep you as my consort, as my concubine, you know, kind of person, because that will show to other people that I love you more, that I'm not just marrying you out of political reasons. I'm keeping you around because I actually love you, and your son is going to be, you know. And this is a whole big setup that he didn't marry her for a reason, and here it's like, oh, he gets married to someone else. And I'm thinking, why wasn't this mentioned in the original Dune book? Let me guess, does she die before the end of the book? Yeah, and of course about three chapters after she's introduced, she dies. And I just didn't give a shit about her. I didn't care about her life. I didn't care what was going to happen to her because I knew that she was going to die. She actually died a lot sooner than I was expected, but then she's just out of the book. I don't have to think about her anymore. And yeah, really, really bad. So anyway, major second point why I didn't like this book. Second, the chapters are really short. It might sound like a small complaint, but it was actually another reason why it took me so long to read, because I would sort of sit there and like open the book, sort of lay in bed, getting ready, here we go, read the book, and I read a bit and the chapter finishes and I'm like, oh, shall I go with another chapter? Okay, and I go with another chapter and it finishes and I'm like, okay, another chapter's gone. And then I just sort of go, can't be bothered anymore. There's too many natural stopping points where I was just closing the book and putting it down and doing something else or reading something else or just going to sleep, because it just felt a lot more interesting than actually going on with the book. And when I mean short chapters here, I'm talking really, really short. I went back through of all the chapters that I'd read so far. The 30 chapters that I'd read. Yep, 30 chapters in 180 pages or less. And because I wanted to see if it wasn't just my imagination that the chapters were starting out short and getting shorter. And let me just reel off the page length of these chapters. 6, 5, 4, 8, 6, 6, 5, 5, 5, 5, 6, 7, 4, 3, 3, a chapter 3 pages long. 5, 3, 7, 4, 3, 3, 5, 3, 2, 3, 3, 5, 5, 3, 5, 5. So literally, it's like you start a book and each chapter is set pretty much on average about 2 weeks apart in the storyline as well. So you start reading and it goes, okay, since the last chapter, this is what happens. And here we'll have the character thinking about what happened over the last 2 weeks of his life. This is the situation that they are now. Here's a small conversation that we had or a small incident. And this is what the main character thought about it. And then it finishes. That's the end of the chapter. And it just happens time and time again, and the chapters get shorter and shorter and shorter, and less stuff happens in them. 30 chapters I got through, and they were 3 pages each, 2 pages each. On average, I would think about the average, you would work it out, probably around about 4, 4.5 pages each. And it's like, you know, what am I trying to say? Some books you say, oh, it's a real page turner. You're like, oh, yes, you end a chapter and you're like, oh, it's a cliffhanger. And you think, well, what's going to happen next? And you turn over and it starts again. And you're like, yes, I'm going to read the next chapter. And you put it down. And you're like, shall I put a new chapter? Yes, I'm going to read. And this book is the opposite of a page turner. There's not a single cliffhanging ending to any of these chapters. So every time you get 3 pages, 4 pages, 5 pages, it's like a natural point to finish and put the book down. That's probably one of the reasons, except that I've been really busy in writing a novel of my own. That's one of the reasons why it took me so long to read, because I just kept on putting it down. And on a larger scale, the same thing happens. Like I say, a section of the book, I actually only got through one of these sections before I stopped reading, but it goes back and talks about Paul's childhood, and that follows the same structure. So it goes back and we read like a few chapters and it sets up the situation, a few more chapters are sort of developing it slightly, and then an important event happens, and then it finishes and goes back to the original time frame. And I'm thinking, in the original time that we were in this original time frame, nothing happened. And then we go back and look at Paul's future life, nothing happened there. And then you start reading again and thinking, just nothing's happening. 180 pages in, nothing's happened. A lot of events have taken place, but it still felt like the story hadn't actually moved forward. The characters haven't moved forward. They've not learnt anything new. They've not changed their views in any way. Nobody's done anything of significance. We're just told that person does this, this person does that, that person does this, this person does that. It's like reading a report about what happened at a conference. Oh, I went here, that happened, this happened there. No connection, nothing at all. Anyway, finish that. Major point that I didn't like the book number three. Major point the third. It's really badly written, and of course I could go into lots of different reasons why it's really badly written, but there's a whole tell people what's happening. Don't show them what's happening, tell them what's happening. Or should you? No, wait a second. The rule is the other way around, isn't it? You're meant to show people about what's happening. Don't tell them about it. So, example. Brian and Kevin. If you're saying to us over and over again that Paul, the great Mordib, is the most fantastic person, the most likable, the greatest leader that we've ever seen, that his soldiers are going to die for him, tell us why. You know, he's really great. No, really, he is. Look, I'm telling you now, he is really great. This person, they would die for Paul. That person thinks they're great. This big crowd of people here, they love him. The people of Arrakis over there, they think he's fantastic, like a god. You know, he really is a god to these people. And the people on Caladan, they love him too. They think he's good as well, and they want him to stay here. Except we're never told anything that he does which is actually good. He doesn't do anything that's actually intelligent. He doesn't beat anyone in battle in a clever way. You know, in the original book he does that, you know, because he goes from the first page, you see how clever he is, you know, when they're introducing and sort of bettering his, like, being a snarky kid to his teachers in a way, and you think, oh, he's a snarky kid, but he's a clever snarky kid. And then he beats someone in battle and you're thinking, wow, okay, he's got tactics under his belt, and then he does this and does that, and he is a military genius, and he is superior to me in intellect and in fighting skills and in everything. And in this book, nothing. We're told over and over again how great he is, but we never see him in action. We never see him using his brain. And the same point goes for every other character in the book. I'm told how evil the bad guys are, but to be honest, the bad guys don't act any more evil than Paul does. So I'm being told that they're evil, and we're being told that they're despicable, and we're being told that they're ugly, but I don't see them acting ugly. I don't see them looking ugly. I don't listen into their thoughts and realize and think, oh man, I would never think that. Nothing like that at all. We're just told that they're bad, and we're told that the good guys are good, and we're told about this, and we're told about that, but we're never shown anything. Which brings me, finally, to my major dissatisfaction, part four, which is violence is the answer to every question. You don't like someone, cut off their head. You know, you need to make a point, kill people. If someone has disobeyed an order, you kill them as well. And if you need to take over a planet, well, you don't do it by economics and you don't do it politically or anything like that. No, just go on and kill everyone. And this city, burn it. And this town, everyone dead there as well. And this thing over here, you don't like it, so just knock it down. And this person here, they looked at you funny, so kill them. And you may think I'm exaggerating, but no, violence is the answer to everything. Now, I know that the jihad killed, 80 billion people? 120 billion people died in the jihad? I think that's what's, like, the figures are mentioned like that in Dune Messiah. We know it was a bad time. We know it was a violent time. And we know that Paul had to do a lot of bad things to get humanity on the right track so they didn't destroy themselves in the future, to give humanity stability so it means it didn't stagnate in the future and be taken over by an external threat. You know, that's what you've got to, you know, that's what we're dealing with here. But I want it to be like violence which happened. Nobody wanted it to happen, but it happened by mistake or people went out of control. But that's not the point. In this book, everyone, like the main characters who I'm meant to like, or think I'm meant to like them, I don't know, but they're the ones killing everyone. Paul Atreides kills people here, gets himself covered in blood. Gurney Halleck there, kills someone. Stilgar just wrecks his city, doesn't control the troops probably. He could have done, but he didn't bother. It's like they're just, you know, violence is the answer. Again, I just don't like characters which are just, at the drop of a hat, just kill people. In fact, I didn't really like Paul Atreides in the original book because I thought he was a bit of a prick, but at least he was a clever bit of a prick and killing wasn't the solution in every situation. And I could understand why the Fremen would kill people just for their water, or they kill their enemies, or if they had sort of some kind of debt or some kind of slight against their honour. They would kill kill people for honor. They would kill people for that. But it was like a way of life in a desert. It was a way of life in, you know, in water, when the persons, you would kill someone just for the water to take out of their body. But in this book, it's just removed from all that, but the killing is still the same. But it's worse, in a way, because they could have done it in different ways. If the authors were clever enough, they didn't have to kill everyone. But here, everything just came down to warfare. Not like economic ways of dealing with things, or political, or even religious ways of dealing with things. Nope, warfare at every time, killing people. And the worst thing about it is the offhand way that the book describes the violence. It's just like everything is calculated in advance. They just say, okay, that he felt like he needed to do this, or he think that it was going to happen, and then it just goes, and he did. And it's like, wait a second, you put more effort into describing this other person making a sandwich. Well, nobody eats in this book, but you know what I mean? It's sort of like, he went over here and he made a sandwich and did this. And this person here, blah, 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 this, killed that person, la-di-da-da. I'm just like, wait a second, you can't just kill that person. It's like they just destroy a city. I'm like, you can't just destroy that city. Why did he destroy that city? There was no reason why he destroyed it. It's just that they went in there and destroyed a city. And it's like, oh, no, well, you can. You can just destroy a city, but why? Do you know? Just felt like it. Needed to make a point, you know, something like that. And I'm not even sure. And remember, these are the good guys making the point. The bad guys, they kill people as well, but not as many as the good guys. So I'm not quite sure why they're the bad people, but they're the bad guys. And there's this scene, you know, where there's this killer plant pots, and I'm not making this up. The characters, it's all set up in advance as well, because the bad guys are going, oh, we're going to harm this family over here, but we're not told how they're going to harm them. But in the next chapter, this next sort of mini chapter that comes on, there's this wedding going to happen, and the gifts are being delivered, and these plants get delivered in plant pots, and they're like, oh, wait a second, are these plants poisonous? No. Are there weapons hidden in the plants? No. What's up with these plants? Oh, they must be okay then. Tell you what, take these plants and put them in the main hall, here, okay. And what about the other gifts? Oh, we don't need to talk about the other gifts. So why did we talk about the plants? No reason to talk about the plants. We're just going to mention them, you know, the off chance that they might be important later. So, but you didn't talk about anything else in this situation. Why did you you've not talked about interior decoration of plants or other gifts or anything like that. Are you talking about plants? No reason. We'll just put the plants here. The wedding's going to happen here. Yeah. We'll just put the plants in here. Why? Don't know. And anyway, of course, the wedding happens. And all these plant pots, you know, they shoot blades into the room. And everyone's like, ah, I'm dying. Oh, it's like, oh, we didn't see this coming. Oh, how could this have happened? It's like, I saw it coming. Me, the reader. I saw this coming 3 chapters ago. It was set up. It's right there. Plant pots in the room. Keep an eye out on these. You know, the gun is there. It's all, the weapon is on the wall. Anyway, so, yeah. And killer plant pots, that's the best weapon that the evil baddies have in here as well. These are like super villains, you know, which have weapons that are worse than killer mutant sea bass with lasers attached to their heads. I think that's the level that we're dealing at. No, worse than that. Anyway, so as I was reading through this book, I got sick of the bloodshed and the violence. And around about page 170, I decided that at the next random killing by one of the main characters who I'm meant to be liking, I'm meant to be following, I'm meant to care about, the next time they kill someone randomly, I'm just going to stop reading. Life is short. I don't need to struggle through such an unenjoyable book. And also, my girlfriend was getting sick of me pointing out the ever-decreasing length of the chapters as I was going through. I was like, hey, this chapter's 2 pages long. 2 pages. It covered 3 chapters, but, you know, if you worked out, you just arrange the text on there. Like, this is like 4 paragraphs long. She was like, shut up. She's like, why are you still reading that book? And I was like, I don't know. Anyway, then Gurney Halleck, he takes revenge and he kills someone over something that happened, I think, about 20 years ago in the past. And this person that he kills, he just says, this person, garrote that person, kill them. And it's like an old man who's completely powerless. And Gurney is in charge of this whole planet at this point. And he just goes up to someone and says, oh, this person, I don't like that person. They did something bad to me. Kill them. And I was like, wait a second. Didn't we learn anything from the first book? Leto, he was meant to be this fantastic duke who loved everyone and was loved because he loved everyone and forgave people and always wanted to do this. You know, and we're not meant to learn anything from the Atreides line. Gurney becomes a figure, in my mind, who is more evil than the Baron Harkonnen was. Because at least he had sort of his motive laid out for him, and he was twisted in his mind. Gurney Halleck's someone who's meant to be good, and yet is carrying out atrocities that are worse than the Baron Harkonnen. So I just didn't want to read anymore. So that pretty much concludes the book review. I didn't go on too long about it. I could have gone on a lot more about what I didn't like about this book, about like the characters, how they're just completely stupid and one-dimensional. And also, there's massive, massive inconsistencies between this book and the original Dune book. For example, one of the battles, they go in and they're killing everyone and there's blood everywhere. I was like, wait a second, there's this whole battle going on here. Why didn't they mention shields? Weren't people wearing shields? How could they, the Fremen, who have never worn shields before in their life, how can the Fremen just come in here and kill everyone in really easily? Wouldn't people be wearing shields? So I didn't even bother to mention it. And it's not just little things that Dune geeks and Dune fans would pick up on, like me, in a way, who's read Dune a few times. I pick up on these things, but it's like, if you've ever read the book Dune before, you'd pick up on these massive inconsistencies. Anyway, this isn't one of the major points. This is just one of the points. I'm not going to go into it now. Normally, I talk about the characters and the plot and the world of the book. Here, I'm not even going to bother. You can read my other Dune reviews to find out more about that kind of thing. You just pick up the major point. Do not read this book. Go read Dune. And if you really, really, really need to read more Dune and you want to check out some of the non-canon Dune books, check out the Machine Wars ones, because they're set far enough away from the Dune books themselves that you're not dealing with any of the same characters, and you're not dealing with this or you're not dealing with that. Except that when you get to it, they talk about the battle of... Is it the Battle of Corrin? I can't remember. And there's this big betrayal between the House Harkonnen and the House Atreides that's meant to happen. And when you actually get to it, it's not a massive betrayal. It's like a slight misunderstanding that somehow managed to set up the world of this long-running, like 10,000-year-running feud between Harkonnens and Atreides. And it's over this minor misunderstanding, not even a big betrayal, which I thought was really disappointing. But that's not this book. That's another book. Either way, those books, read them if you really got to do it. But stay away from any of the books that... of these guys that deal directly with the characters that you also read about in Dune, because it makes you hate the characters. It really does spoil it for you. So yeah, listen to the original book review that I did of Dune, chapter 11 it is. I just looked it up just now while I've been talking to you. Two things at once, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, and in that review, I actually end that review by saying I could end this review by talking about loads more cool stuff, but I'm going to stop there. And here I'm going, I could continue this review by doing lots more bad stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to give this book 0.5 stars out of 5. And you may be thinking, Luke, you said last time that you weren't going to bother with another one of these non-canon Dune books. Why did you read it? Well, the company that's promoting this book sent me a copy and said, hey, do you want to review this and share it with your listeners or readers? And I could have said no thanks, but they obviously hadn't looked at my website on the sfbrp.com and saw that I gave the last book a full 0.5 stars out of 5 when I read half of Hunters of Dune, and which is a pity, because the agent who sent me the book seemed like a decent enough guy. We've emailed back and forth a few times, and it seems that he's also taking part in the National Novel Writing Month Challenge. I just hope he's a better book writer than he is a book researcher. Otherwise, he might have noticed that sending me this book wasn't the best thing to do. So, if any other book publishers want to send me free stuff, go ahead. I will be brutally honest, though. The next book that I'm going to read is... Actually, I haven't decided yet, because I finished reading this book last night. I just threw it aside and said, I'm not going to read it anymore. So I haven't actually got... So here in front of me, I've got Kim Stanley Robinson, The Gold Coast. I've got Robert Reed, The Well of Stars. If you remember the last Robert Reed book I read, I wanted to read the sequel to Marrow. And I picked up a book thinking it was the sequel to Marrow, and it wasn't. So I've actually got the right book here now. So I've got that. And also I've got the John Wyndham anthology that I've got, this omnibus. Dave the Chiff has read that, so maybe The Chrysalids. So it's going to be probably one of those three books or another book entirely. I'm thinking Dan Simmons' Hyperion is going to be read within the next one or two books. So any other book review suggestions, that you've got any other books that you want me to check out? If I've read them before, I will email you back and give you my personal opinions on that. And just to make it clear, I have read a lot of books, but then again, there's probably more books that I've not read. So send in your suggestions. And by the way, if you're going to send me books book things, you know, don't say, oh, I'm going to send you this and put it on your books to read and give a bad review to. I don't do that. I read books that, you know, people actually recommend. And this book, Paul of June, was recommended to me by, let me just have here on the back of the book, by Arthur C. Clarke. I know nothing comparable to it except Lord of the Rings. And also the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they also write, appealing and gripping, fascinating detail, yet cloaked in mystery and mysticism. And there's also this one as well by the Kirkus Review. They say, the vast and fascinating Dune saga sweeps on, as exciting and as gripping as ever. And then I actually read that. No, wait a second. Arthur C. Clarke said that about Dune. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel actually said that about Heretics of Dune. And the Kirkus Review said that about Chapter House Dune. It's like, they're not even writing about the same book. They've put quotes on here for a different book written by a whole different author. So, not even any good things. Here we have Publishers Weekly on Hunters of Dune. They said, entertaining. Great. Entertaining. But then again, wasn't there another thing that Publishers Weekly talked about? Wasn't it Red Thunder by John Varley? They're also like, oh, fantastic book as well. So, never really go by Publishers Weekly if you see their quotes on the back of any book. Just ignore it and listen to me instead. No, don't listen to me. Just at least I give some reasons why I like and dislike books. So thanks a lot for listening. Reviews of good books, or hopefully good books, will resume shortly. See you next time.